This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Recently, I've seen three great movies that critics gave bad reviews on, and those actually made me stay away from them when they were in the theater. But when I watch them at home, they're really good. So what other movies out there that were written off, but they may not be that bad? Managing editor at Movies.com and contributing editor at Fandango.com, Eric Davis, is here to explain why bad movies are not bad. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into like the meat and bones of like movies and reviews, what kind of criteria do reviewers use? Because you see a lot of times there's the 5-star and then there's the 10-star or there's a percentage. Is there any particular reason why there's not like a universal system?
Well, I think it's because for every critic is different. You know, everybody sort of reviews movies through their own eyes and how they see them. And we have to remember that, you know, a review is basically an opinion. It's what, you know, this film expert thinks on about the movie. And so they're going to review the movie in however they see fit. So we see some people review movies where they'll write really long reviews, and that's kind of what they want to present. Some people will write really short reviews and maybe give you, like, you know, a star rating, you know, as something to kind of a guide to help you. And then some people will go to like Rotten Tomatoes and they'll see like, okay, I'll see this score. That's sort of an average culmination of what all of the different critics think. And I'll use that as my determination. So, you know, everybody is different. You know, when I write reviews, I sort of write towards emotions. And so, you know, I kind of write about how the movie makes me feel. And I think that, you know, when we go to the movies, we're looking for an experience. We're looking for an experience that maybe moves us and makes us feel things that we don't normally feel in different ways. So, you know, I usually, when I watch a movie, I really kind of take note of how it's making me feel. And then I try to project that in how I write about it. And so, you know, other people will take a very analytical approach to it, whereas, like, you know, the shot selection was poor, or I like the way the color timing was off, or whatever it is, you know. So everybody's different.
Oh, so, you know, that's kind of, I like to know that you think of it like, how does it make me feel? Because the technical aspect of movies, to me, it's like, I don't really understand it. It's like some critics sit there and say Michael Bay is a genius director. And I'll sit there and say, I can't see, you know, how Transformers could be like that. But whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's different. You know, like, I do really love Michael Bay. I think Michael Bay is a director who sort of throws everything he has at a film and a scene and sort of really wants to try to make it bigger and more explosive. And, you know, I think that he could benefit from better scripts and better stories because I really, you know, there are sort of rare to have a director who has made that much of a name for himself over the years, and so he can kind of make movies on his own terms. And so they really give you these giant spectacles. You know, there's a film out this summer called Dunkirk from director Christopher Nolan, and that's a really great example of just, like, if you really like the craft of filmmaking, they really gave this guy carte blanche to kind of make the sort of war movie that he wanted to make. And so he tried to be as practical as you could possibly get, going so far as to strap giant IMAX cameras on the wings of aircrafts and take actors up into these planes, up into the air, and sort of recreate aerial dogfights for real. And so, like, that kind of stuff is super cool, you know. Whether or not, you know, the general audience really kind of thinks about those things, I don't know. But, you know, I think, you know, for a critic to point that out may elevate your experience of a film, knowing that that's what went into making it.
When it comes to films, should you just, as the viewer, should you just go to movies that you want to follow the director or you want to follow an actor instead of relying on the reviews? And the reason I'm saying this is because I was thinking of Goldie Hawn. I didn't realize that I liked a lot of movies that Goldie Hawn was in. Overboard, Death Becomes Her, First Wives Club, a bunch of others. And most of those movies got bad reviews, but I love them. Should I just follow Goldie Hawn regardless of what the review says then?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You should always see what you want to see based on why you want to see it. You should never think that I can only go to see stuff that has a good review. If you like movies that star Goldie Hawn, then for sure, go to see everything that Goldie Hawn is in, you know? If you like comedies, you know, then go see comedies, even if it gets a bad review. If you want to laugh, then go see it. You know, you should always go to see something that, you know, appeals to you. I am of the opinion that no matter how bad a movie is reviewed, there are always people out there that love that movie. It's just, there is no doubt. It's just what it is. And so, you know, if you watch a trailer for something and you're like, that looks cool, I want to see that movie, and it gets really bad reviews, still go see the movie. It's cool. You know, you may like it. It doesn't matter, you know. So, you know, you always have to remember that these reviews are just someone else's opinion. And so, you know, you have your own opinion, and if you think something looks cool and you think it kind of appeals to you in some way, then go see it.
You know, recently I went to see The Mummy, and that actually has a lot of bad reviews, and people have been saying, oh, this is a, you know, remake, Brandon Fraser should have been in it, and a slew of other stuff. And my nephew, he's like, I really want to go see it, and it's because he likes Tom Cruise. So I'm like, okay, we'll go see it. I'll take you, because no one else wanted to take him. So I took him to see it, and I really liked The Mummy. It is like, I don't think this should have been considered a remake of the old Mummies with Brandon Fraser. This is a brand new movie, and almost kind of like The League of Extraordinary Men, where you can see they're going to try to franchise it and build upon it. So I don't know where these people came off reviewing this as bad and comparing it to a movie that had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Yeah, you know, and that's a great example of sort of finding something that, you know, surprising, that all these people kind of reviewed it negatively, and then you went to see it. And this is you're not the only person I heard this from. I heard this from a lot of people who just were like, you know what, I'm just going to go see The Mummy. And they were like, that was actually a fun ride of a film. And, you know, I think that that's what happens. I think a lot of people, because they announced sort of ahead of time that this was going to be the first of sort of a universe of monster movies, I think a lot of people got caught up with that. And I think a lot of critics got caught up with that in terms of looking at the film a different way because they had these expectations on it in terms of it launching this kind of larger franchise. And so I think if you just kind of went into it looking for, you know, an entertaining piece of content to go watch for the evening, I think you came out of it, you know, unexpectedly surprised to find something that you really enjoyed. And so you're totally not the only one that feels that way. And it really does go to show that, you know what, take a chance on some of these films. If they look interesting and if they star people that you like watching, you know, I love watching Tom Cruise. I always say, no matter what, Tom Cruise will give you your money's worth because he gives it his all in a movie. And so I will go see any movie that Tom Cruise is in, even if it does have bad reviews. And so, yeah, I mean, I think if you think something's cool, then go see it. Don't listen to the critics.
I like that because, you know what, that's so true. Tom Cruise, every time he's in a movie, like regardless of what you think of his personal life or think of him, he gives like 120% every time he does his own stunts. He makes sure that the script is good. I mean, this guy is going to entertain you. I think, you know, and that in itself, you should go see his stuff.
For sure. That's why I love watching him. I mean, just in The Mummy alone, he did this crazy airplane sequence in zero gravity, you know, and they could have filmed that on a green screen. They could have manipulated the environment to kind of make it look like they were in zero gravity. But Tom Cruise was like, no. I want to actually take a plane up to zero gravity, and I want to shoot. I want to take 60 takes of us floating around while people are throwing up all around him. You know, he wanted to get that scene and be as authentic to that moment as he possibly could. And that's, you know, I love actors like that. You know, not everybody gives it their all like he does. And so that's why I always say, good, I'll throw my money down for you, Tom Cruise, because you know how to roll.
You know, I recently also heard about they were announced a casting for the upcoming Three Stooges movie. And I'm like, oh, my God, this doesn't sound like it's going to be good. But did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, it's interesting what they're doing with this one. They cast three kids to do it. And so I think they're going to kind of go with, like, the Three Stooges as little kids. and try to go that route. You know, they keep, you know, the Three Stooges is sort of this brand that's existed for years and years and years. And so I think that, you know, they want to kind of keep playing with it, and they feel like they've done what they could with sort of bringing back the Three Stooges, kind of recasting Moe, Larry, and Curly as adults. So they're like, okay, well, you know, slapstick comedy, kind of what the Three Stooges are known for, you know, very physical comedy, you know, what does that appeal to? And maybe it appeals more to little kids. And so I guess they're taking the inventive approach of saying, look, let's cast the Three Stooges as little kids. Let's see Moe, Larry, and Curly as kids and see if that physical sort of slapstick comedy works better with a younger audience. And it just may. So, you know, definitely, you know, an interesting decision. We'll see what it turns out to. But, you know, definitely an interesting decision on their part.
Yeah, I think it is, too, because I seeing the Three Stooges as kids, I don't know. You always assume that they grew up together. But for me, growing up, there were always grown men acting a fool. So this is going to be very different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that many people care so much about the mythology behind the Three Stooges. You know, I think that it's just like, it's Moe, Larry, and Curly. They know that. They know it's slapstick. They know it's physical. So it doesn't matter how old they are. Just go at it.
Another movie that I think it was at San Diego Comic-Con, it was announced that they're going to do a Doctor Doom movie. But he's like the main villain of Fantastic Four. Do you think that they'll be able to make a movie without the Fantastic Four being the focal point?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. You know, they seem to be doing this a lot now. Where they're taking sort of villains and creating movies around the villain. You know, we saw this kind of with Suicide Squad, where it was just a bunch of villains. Disney tried it with Maleficent. They're also going to do a Cruella De Vil movie, Disney, as well, with Emma Stone playing a young Cruella De Vil. And so, you know, this is kind of a new thing. And I think that when we've had some Fantastic Four movies that haven't necessarily done that well, Dr. Doom is a really interesting character, and he was one of my, out of that last Fantastic Four movie that they did, I thought he had a really cool, interesting story arc. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, I think it's interesting. You know, I think that, especially with a lot of these superhero movies, the villains are always the weakest aspect of them. And so I think kind of centering a movie on a villain and sort of trying to find ways for us to invest in them, even though they do have sort of these tendencies to be bad, I think is a really interesting thing and something that we're not really used to seeing. So I'm all about it. I think it'll be interesting to see how they do it, and whether or not they use it to sort of segue into another Fantastic Four movie in some way. But yeah, I mean, you know, bring it on. Why not?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, only because I think of it like I can see it being an anti-hero, which that would be like the Punisher or even like Spider-Man's villain Venom. Those would be considered anti-heroes. But for the villain to get their own story, is this an idea that maybe a new type of storytelling, or did they just kind of run out of ideas that, hey, let's just make the bad guy the focal point?
I think it's, you know, I never say people are running out of ideas, because I think that if there's anything that, you know, there are so many creative people in Hollywood and there's so many creative people around the world that I think, if anything, we're getting more and more ideas in. And I think it's just another way to approach sort of a familiar territory. And so I think in order for genre movies and especially superhero movies for them to continue evolving, then you have to really sort of deconstruct them and try to find other access points for them and other interesting stories to tell. So I think that, you know, focusing on the villain and maybe kind of creating a villain that's a, sort of an anti-hero, I think is interesting. And that's one of the things I loved about the premise of Suicide Squad was putting all of these supervillains together and trying to tell a story where you're investing in them. And then what happens if, okay, what happens if we do Batman movie and we see one of them as the villain? And so I think that that introduces an interesting sort of quandary for the audience member, where they saw this villain in another movie and they invested in them and they really liked them, but now they're becoming the villain in a Batman movie and we really love Batman. And then I think it presents an interesting question for the audience. It's like, who are you rooting for when you have a movie where you've rooted for both of these characters before? So I like that. I think it puts the audience in an interesting position that they're not used to being in. And any kind of film that does that is one that I totally support.
So August is coming up. Are there any movies that you would recommend people to go see?
There's one called Logan Lucky. It's from Steven Soderbergh, who did the Ocean's 11 movie and Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13. And this is sort of reminds me of Ocean's 11 in terms of it's another heist movie, but it takes place in the world of NASCAR. And it stars Channing Tatum and Daniel Craig and who plays Kylo Ren in Adam Driver in Star Wars, and it looks really funny, and it's got a lot of really cool things about it. And I think Steven Soderbergh is a great director, especially when he's directing heist movies. And I love a good heist movie, especially in August after all these giant blockbusters that are driven by their special effects. After they all come through, you know, we want something a little bit more grounded, a little bit fun, a little entertaining, that's got a great cast. And I think Logan Lucky is really going to slide into August and surprise some people in that way.
For those listening and want to learn more about you, where can they find you at?
You can find me at Fandango. I'm doing a lot of interviews over there. So if you when you're buying your movie tickets, you can kind of go around the site a little bit and check me out. And then also on Twitter, at Eric Davis, Eric with a K, I'm doing a lot of tweeting about everything that I do and everything that I watch and every event that I cover. So you can kind of follow my adventures on Twitter if you are one of those people that follow people on Twitter.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate you being here, Eric.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.